Are you addicted to the internet? Could you face the week without your smartphone, without your iPhone, your Android phone, whatever it is, or your iPad, your tablet, as the BBC like to say, so they don't promote it? Well, over half of UK internet users say they're hooked to their devices, over a third trying to digital detox, according to an Ofcom report. The study reveals how the internet is affecting people's personal and working lives, and it's not good. So is it time to try and switch off? James Stinson is from Ofcom, the communications regulator. Morning, James.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. You've been looking at how we use the internet in Northern Ireland.
We have indeed, yes.
No doubt looking up information on your iPhone and your iPad to do it.
Absolutely, yes. We're all digitally addicted, it seems. Because we're online more so than ever, we undertook a little bit of research to find out how people feel about this, you know, what they think of the benefits and the disadvantages. And it's important to stress that, you know, the vast majority of people think that being online is a good thing, that it broadens their horizons, makes their home life easier, their work life easier, it makes them more informed about the world that they live in. But it also appears that you can have too much of a good thing. Two-thirds of us think that we are hooked to our connected device. And as you pointed out, a third of us have tried some sort of digital detox in the last year, period, offline.
60-odd percent of us say we're hooked on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. We spend most of that, when they say hooked, a similar number of people say they spend too much time on their devices, browsing or whatever. So the good news is, I think that we are starting to self-regulate, that a similar number of people have said that, you know, they've cut down on some of their activities over the last year. Interesting to note that half of parents say they've put in place some sort of time restrictions on the amount of time their children spend on their connected devices. So while there are these downsides, I think, you know, we are learning to cope with them. It's important. Look, you've got to look at where we are now compared to where we were 5-10 years ago. Smartphones really only been around 5-6 years. So these are new technologies. They're having a very deep impact in our everyday lives, all day, every day. So we're still grappling with what they are and what they do and how we cope with that.
Are there figures for how many people actually text people in the same room as them?
There is indeed, and I'm ashamed to say I'm guilty of doing this myself. Something like 1 in 4 internet users admit to say doing messaging or texting people in the same room. Now, I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it's something which has happened. And another figure that came out of this was that 1 in 3 internet users get a bit annoyed because they feel that sometimes people in their company are ignoring them by being on their connected device, you know, be it at home or in a restaurant or in a bar, and I suspect we've all been there. I think the interesting thing about this research is that we all, I think as individuals, we can all see these things. The useful thing is to know that everybody is going through this sort of digital sort of
dream. You see, for those people who say the age of conversation's over, they're wrong, aren't they? It's just a different type of conversation. So if you're sitting essentially talking through your phone on text to someone else, you're still talking to them. You're just not verbally talking to them.
You are. It's a lot for your, I think it's, personally, I think it's a lot for your brain to manage and take in, because you're not just sitting having a one-to-one conversation. But so far, we've seemed able to cope with it. I don't know whether you have tried to do a digital detox.
No, I couldn't do that.
Well, again, that's another thing our research brought up, that, you know, majority of people say they have this fear of missing out if they're not online.
If my phone is out of power, which it often is, it's nearly a feeling like hunger to me. I need to get it powered up. I hate being without my phone.
Well, the vast majority of people have very positive experiences about the internet because they know a lot more about what's going on in the world. It makes their work easier. It makes keeping in touch with friends and family easier. If you have friends or family living on the other side of the world, you can just FaceTime them or Skype them. These are things that are just transformational that you couldn't have done 5-10 years ago. So what important to keep this in perspective, there are some disadvantages, and that's what our survey showed. But by far and away, you know, more people were pleased with the experience they get out of the internet and being online, and I see it as a big positive.
It's interesting, just finally, James, it's interesting, this information for you as a regulator, Ofcom, because, of course, the internet is unregulated, isn't it? So this thing that so many people are now using, Ofcom can't regulate. Don't regulate.
That's true, and it's probably true to say, nor should the internet be regulated.
Really?
But But I'm not going to go down that route. It's not really above my pay grade. But you could say that, we work as a regulator with the telecoms providers. So we regulate them. So we work with them.
You regulate us? You regulate the BBC, don't you?
We regulate bits of the BBC presently.
I wonder if you had have you regulated me in the past?
Getting back to the point in hand, Stephen, it's more important to realise. Actually, it is important. It's important for us to know what people are doing on their smartphones, because we make the spectrum available, the airwaves over which these mobile signals are.
But James,
we make that available to mobile.
Yeah, but you see, I know I'm having a bit of fun with you, but you see what I'm trying to get at, in that in this modern world now, where, look, we've decided as a society there's a need for a regulator to make sure that certain thresholds, I guess, are not being passed, that there's a degree of respect and accuracy on the likes of the BBC and elsewhere. That's why you need regulators. On the internet these days, Twitter, Facebook, they can be just as powerful sometimes in disseminating information as the likes of the BBC. And yet there's no regulation. So what is this modern world going to look like in another 5 years?
Well, what we're trying to do as a regulator, we have advice on our website. If you're a parent, for example, who's concerned about what their children might be seeing online, we have a leaflets on our website, advice, guidance on how you can educate and inform your children, the kind of technical steps that you can take to bring in about filters and what have you. We're also working with the telecoms providers, the broadband providers, to make sure that those kind of filters that they use for the internet, they're set at default on. So we do have a role in this, in terms of educating people, informing people, working with, using our soft powers, if you like, with industry to make the situation better, to make it more comfortable for people. So I don't think, while we strictly, per se, don't regulate the internet, I don't think it's an area which is of significant interest to us.
James, thank you very much indeed. Morning to you. That's James Stinson, the regulator for Ofcom. Check that man's name out, Vinny.
Why don't you?
Well,
like
I want to see if that man's investigated me.
He probably has. Who knows? Would he have anything to investigate you for?
Well, now, there's another story. The commentator, Seamus Close, you have often called a dinosaur, Vinny.
I have never called you a dinosaur, Seamus.
Because he doesn't have a mobile phone. What type of modern man, Mr. Close, does not have a mobile phone?
Well, I suppose if some people want to look at me as being a dinosaur, I think the problem lies with them rather than me, because, put it in simple terms, I'm not a slave to technology. And as I've said before, I can thoroughly enjoy my life without feeling this. It's verging on addiction.
Yes, I'm addicted to my phone.
Yeah, and when you look at the figures from the Ofcom's annual report that we're talking about, I mean, some of the figures in there are really frightening. You've touched on a couple of them this morning. 34% of users themselves feel that they need a detox. Now, why do you need a detox? You need a detox if you're addicted. And then there's 59% of them consider themselves to be hooked. But then there's other aspects to it that come out in this report of where there's, what is it, a quarter of the teenagers claim that they're late for school because of technology, because of Facebook or the internet or their mobile phones or whatever. They're not doing their homework. Then the point that James mentioned whenever he was speaking there about the number of people who feel that they're ignored by their friends in, for example, a restaurant, or they're out trying to have a normal human conversation, which is interrupted by a phone, and the person walks away to talk to whoever it is, to talk to the bit of plastic in their hands, and ignore the real person there. And I really do believe that the art of human eyeball-to-eyeball conversation is suffering. It's losing out because of this addiction, this compulsive.
It's just a new way of talking to people.
But is it to the good or is it to the bad? And the fact that people are feeling that they need to have the detox from it suggests to me, or confirms within my mind, someone who doesn't have a mobile phone, that it's the overuse of it, the dependency of it, which is bad. Now,
well, Seamus, just as an example,
you put your hand up when you want to speak.
Be polite now. We've been on air for about, say, 12 minutes or so, and I've been sat in here with Stephen that entire time, Seamus, and he has checked his phone now 8 times.
Well, no, hold on a minute. You're not providing the context.
No, well, you put whatever context you...
The context says Gregory Campbell's currently texting me.
Yeah, so he's not been texting me for 12 minutes.
When I said the radio show is the biggest radio show in the country, the rage hours are just out.
Yes.
He's now texting me.
But my point is, you haven't actually been necessarily doing anything on there. You're just checking. You're looking for updates. I do the exact same. I tried this on myself about 2 weeks ago where I thought, I'll see how long in the evening when I'm sitting watching TV, the gaps in between. And the longest gap between when I wanted to check my phone was 20 minutes.
Yeah, so. Apparently, on the report, nearly half of those using check it 10 times a day. Some of them, 1 in 10, 10%, are on it 50 times a day. And when you translate that all into time, into the time of our lives, a typical adult is spending 25 hours a week online.
That sounds about right. But because it is an addiction, it's a constant thing. You're checking for updates. When you add in work to all the social media stuff, and of course that's all part and parcel of in here. You're checking emails. You're constantly working. You're checking Facebook posts, tweets. I'm not sure if it is good for me. I'm not sure about anyone else, but I do find it difficult to put my phone down. And as Stephen said, if my phone is out of power, if the battery is low, I start to worry. I start to think I'm in the 20% zone. What will do? Well, that's a good point.
You know, there's 24 hours a day, 160 hours in a week, and if you're sleeping for 48 of those hours, leaves 120 hours, and you're spending, or you're suggesting to me that you're spending, maybe 25 hours of that on technology.
And he's still texting Gregory Campbell. See, there has to be a point where... Give me that phone.
No,
phone.
I have to respond to that man.
What's he said
He's
to
not
you?
Making these accusations without me having a go at him.
Nobody knows he's making accusations. You're on the air and Seamus is talking to
morning,
him.
Morning, Fionnuala Meredith. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Good morning, sorry. Slightly distracted. Now, you don't do Twitter or Facebook or anything like it, is that right?
That's right. I don't do any kind of social media. I've got to say, going on the internet is a brilliant resource for myself as a journalist and commentator. Of course, I use it a lot, but I don't like social media. I mean, it just seems like a vast echo chamber to me. I know there's some stuff that's of value on there. I always
it's
think
not it's an echo like chamber. It's a modern way of communicating with people.
I always think it's a bit like going, and you go on there, you know, to see what people are saying. It's a bit like going to one of those kind of bargain clothes shops. You know, you're maybe going to find one decent thing to wear, but you have to sort through an awful lot of guff to find it. And frankly, I just don't want to give up my sweet short life to spending too much time on there and, you know, looking for the good stuff. I also think that...
This is like someone that still has a black and white television.
No, I'm not that bad.
But it really is. This is it's part of the modern world, this.
You have to go from one extreme to the other.
Well, you two might as well just get on a horse and cart if you're wanting to drive to Port Rush for the day.
There are advantages to it. I mean, if I were to tell you, for example, that I spent 5 minutes yesterday speaking to my son and my grandson of 6 months old whenever they were on holiday through...
I don't think anyone's disputing that, you know, that there's these kinds of advantages. I just talked to my daughter and she's in Australia. So, you know, of course, there's brilliant advantages. I'm not disputing that. But I do think when it gets to the extent that people are feeling like they can't separate from their phones, something is definitely going wrong. And I think there's also this illusion of friendship that you can get with social media. I'd rather have a few real friends that I actually speak to in the flesh rather than thousands of kind of make-believe friends.
When you're at home, yeah, I'm sure you're at home now or out in the car. In other words, as you're listening to the radio, I'm not firing on full cylinder today, am I?
No, because you're distracted by your phone.
So basically, what I want to ask you this morning, does it not wind you up when people are out with you at a restaurant or wherever and they're sitting on their own? You're sitting the other side of the table and they're actually on their
phone.
I've
been out to a restaurant with you and you do that as well. Project it onto other people. You do this.
But come on, I'm talking to prime ministers and much more important people than you.
Yes, of course you are.
Right. I'm probably talking to Big Audrey. But seriously, do people not really wind you up when they're sitting right beside you in a restaurant and they are texting or they're looking up somebody in tweet or Facebook post? 0330 80 55 55. Basil McRae's never off Twitter. Describes himself as a tech addict. He does these little, what do you call these
He's
things?
Just constantly broadcasting. He's like a one-man TV
Periscope.
Show. Yes.
He walks around with a camera in his lapel.
He actually has one strapped to him.
Yes.
He does. He has a camera strapped to him.
What strapped to him?
A camera.
Good morning, Basil.
Morning, Stephen. And you please, you know, we're broadcasting you live now on Periscope.
See, this man's obsessed.
That's me talking to you online. And I can't believe you found so many Neanderthals to bring onto your show to talk about how social media is some form of disease. It's the future. Everybody knows it. Everybody's involved in it. Everybody loves it. It's going to revolutionise the world.
Basil, why do people need a detox then if it's the future? Are they all going to be in detox in the future, or are they going to resort back to what one would consider to be a normal life where you can use the machine but spend most of your time speaking to people, enjoying your life, not feeling that you've got to embellish your life or pretend in many people's cases. For example, in Facebook, where most of it is a lie. They're trying to surpass the Joneses, not to keep up with them, because they feel that their own life is boring.
You said one thing, which was it gets away with eye-to-eye conversations. Actually, if you're into modern telecommunications, it's exactly that. I look at people in the eye. I talk to my grandchildren eye-to-eye. I talk to my friends in Dubai eye-to-eye. I talk to my friends in America eye-to-eye. It forms a community. It keeps people together. I get informed about what's going on in Turkey. I get informed of what's going on around the world. I make friends. Last night, we were broadcasting live from the John Hewitt in Belfast saying, this is what's on. Gerry McCabe was talking about what's on in the arts in Belfast. Get on down here, have a look at it. And it is just a wonderful experience. And in case people are worried, I have two phone accounts with 20 gigabytes of data on both, and I use my landline when I'm at home. It is the future.
Obsessed.
And those people that don't really see it are going to have to wake up fairly soon.
Basil, you sound evangelical. You sound like an evangelical preacher when you talk like that. Of course, no one is saying that no one's making a blanket condemnation of using Periscope or Skype or any of these things. What we're saying is that there's some problems when people feel they can't disconnect from it or they get overly reliant on it. It's like
sort of like food, sort of like food, sort of like eating too much. I mean, Seamus wants to detox, but I mean, people make the argument, isn't food a good thing? So people eat too much food?
Yeah. Everything in moderation. But that's like...
That's how I live my life.
Listen, sometimes I wonder if people are scared to spend time alone with themselves. Sometimes this is an almighty distraction for people
to
avoid actually spending time just thinking.
For example, Basil McRae, are you on Periscope now? What is the advantage of you being on Periscope now?
So what I've got at the moment, I've got Fiona, who is, if she doesn't mind me saying, from Sinn Féin and Dundalk, on making a few comments. I've got Michael, who's on from New York, who's a friend, just wants to keep in touch. He's an expat. I've got Neva, who's on because she was on talking about Turkey and all of the events that were happening there.
Yes, but this is what are they doing? They're sitting watching you talking to me when they could be listening to me direct.
Well, actually, I have tried to tell them that, but then the radio is just, it's going to go the way of the newspapers. You know, I mean, people actually, but you do a lot of Facebook Lives.
I certainly do. The BBC doesn't like my Facebook Lives, but I like them.
I can understand why, but people like to engage with you face-to-face. And I do think that no matter what the naysayers say, this live video changes everything. It gets people to form a community. They are able to talk to people. They're able to share their experiences. And it is wonderful, wonderful.
It's not all about self-flattery and self-admiration.
Well, it isn't from my point of view, actually. What I was struck about when I heard people talking about the social media, and I mean, I had a fairly rough time in Twitter and things like that in the past, but social media is not live streaming. Live streaming changes everything. Live streaming is what we've done through millennia. It's people talking to one another, eye to eye, seeing all of the facial expressions, seeing the raised eyebrows, listening to the tone of the voice. You have a genuine conversation. And I tell you, within two years, we will all have virtual reality goggles. There's a prediction for you. Even you, Seamus, will
get me out, Basil.
There is a certain amount of flattery, though, when it comes to social media. You're very guilty of it. You know, when
what are you talking about?
Well, we use social media as another way for people to listen to you. So
I hate people
even
saying social media.
Well, we use Twitter, for example, audio boost. We put out audio clips on that. And that's another way to share you. So it's just constant self-promotion. I do it myself. Then you have a listen to this podcast. We're looking for this. You know, here's this or whatever. We're doing this tomorrow. You're constantly talking. You do it as well. So it's My point is it's all about attention. Social media is about attention.
Ridiculous.
You get people that post these things up on Facebook, and these posts say things like, oh, you know, I'm so upset, blah, blah, blah. And then the first thing, the comment underneath it is, what are you upset about? What's wrong? Oh, I don't want to talk about it. And then you think, well, why are you on Facebook in the first place?
Yeah, and I don't want to see what people have for their breakfast. I don't imagine that, you know, all these photographs of what people are eating, I don't imagine that people are interested in what I'm eating or all the kind of minutiae, all the little different things I do in my day.
Tell you what, you should see some of the photographs I get in Snapchat. You wouldn't want that for your breakfast. Vinti, good morning.
Stephen, you all right?
Good morning.
Seamus is getting on like one of them two-year-old characters. Where are the Muppets that
yes.
stand up? No, sits in the balcony.
Sits in the balcony.
Sadler and Waldorf. And by the way, I like the cut of Basil's jib. Basil's right. It's a future. It's a good way of keeping in contact with people. I've got many friends in Australia, America, and Canada who can keep in contact with. There's nothing wrong with that, Stephen.
Here's another question, Vinti. Are we close to the stage where someone like Basil or others, right, that you know, maybe are slightly sexier, slightly trendier?
Basil right? might be very upset at the suggestion Basil not sexy or trendy.
My reaction online, you can see that I just laughed at that. I realised that was just a gentle jive.
He is addicted.
Yes, but let me finish the point.
Yes.
Are we close to the stage, do you think, where people like Basil and others who are maybe sexier and trendier
yes.
will be able to take on people like me who has a live television show on the BBC. My point being that actually it used to be the power was with the broadcaster, and that's the only way that you could broadcast a show, because you needed a transmitter and you needed a licence and you needed someone like the BBC or ITV. All of a sudden now, Basil, you can do it, and if someone is engaging enough, there are some Facebook posts that get more views than the BBC get.
Yeah,
so where are we going to be in 2, 5, 10 years' time?
In fact, take the kid with Tourette's, Lewis Nicol, was on the TV show.
He was on Nolan Live.
He was on Nolan Live, and he came on the TV show. You can see how many figures
I like
that get. But his video was online, 100 million, and that was months ago when we had him on, 100 million
yes,
views.
Blows me out of the water.
Completely.
My point made.
Completely.
Thanks, Fiona. I just want to say on a serious point is that I do think that live streaming will change the relationship between the media and society. Stephen, you're absolutely right. There was a monopoly of the broadcasters. BBC did have it, and others, of course, were in there too. But this ability to go and tell your story to your audience is fantastic.
Yeah, but who's going to pay for Basil McRae TV?
Anne Travers, who you know really well, was on broadcasting on Facebook Live about her experiences, connecting with her community, and she got rave reviews from it. It is a fantastic tool, and it will change the relationship. And it's also so immediate. If you do not get the story out within an hour, then you're nowhere nowadays. Even BBC are struggling to keep up to speed with events that happen.
You know what? You know what happens though, Basil? Quality control can quite often go. That's the difficulty. At least with the BBC and other main media organisations, there is a level of quality control and fact checking. And I think one of the difficulties with these other mediums is that that just isn't there.
Perhaps
censorship as well.
Well, you say censorship. I can give you. I won't actually give you the specific. I won't actually give you the specific news stories, but I can tell you now. I can think of two incidents in my head right now, and I won't specify what they are, where when I was broadcasting a major international news event, that there were alternative versions of that story gaining massive momentum on Twitter and Facebook, which were A, Basil untrue, and B, dangerous. And that is the danger of social media, that if it is this free for all and get it out first and get it out fast, then the actual point of whether it's true or not falls by the wayside.
And there is, of course, a danger in that, Stephen.
There's nobody controlling it.
But then you also have an issue that there's plenty of news that is not reported. I mean, about the surrounding of the biggest US airbase outside America by Muslims. That wasn't reported, and yet there's a big story there. There's all sorts of stories that people want to get out, and it is then up for other media sources to correlate and to change. But I can tell you this, if it happens now, it's on social media immediately. And we, all of us, have to get used to how we deal with this. People like being kept informed, they like to have their view, they like to have their say, and I've no doubt that the media will adapt to the new technology.
So 15 million adults have tried a digital detox. The question is, someone has actually taken your phone away from you during that conversation.
Yes, that
they came in here.
That dopey little strange
man. He keeps
you
right.
He
keeps
you right. Has come and tried to take my phone. He ran out like something on Carry On Penelope.
Could you do a digital detox if we took your phone away from you, if you couldn't check social media, if you couldn't see what people were saying about you? You're not even listening to me
right
now.
Say it again.
What is wrong with you?
What is wrong? Say it again.
Could you do a digital detox?
No, nor would I do one.
Why not, though?
Because I like my phone. I like seeing what my my 150,000 followers are saying
about you. Yes,
are saying to me.
Yeah, no, well, it's a bit of a mixture. Let's not pretend it's not. Seamus might be missing out on some things by not having social media, but he's also gaining in other places. Whereas he is aware of things. Like,
you
what's this, another thing here? 25% of people have bumped into someone while looking at their phone.
Oh yeah.
So
oh,
like physically, you're not even looking where you're going.
Stephen, do you honestly not feel it dangerous to say to the general public that you cannot do without your phone?
No.
Do you not find that dangerous?
No, because I think a lot of the general public probably empathise with that.
Yes, do they?
Widen it out. Do you not find that that is a danger step down which society is going, that they cannot do without that little thing in their pocket, that they feel naked without it, that they don't feel human without it, that they can't go about their normal lives without it?
Yeah,
there's something wrong.
This is what they said about the newspapers when they first came out. Why do people need to know what's going on? Their betters will tell them what happens. They'll find out in different places.
Okay, Basil, but they weren't reading the newspaper 24 hours a day, running down the street with it, reading the newspaper in restaurants and trains and that, and ignoring their friends. This is where we seem to be going.
I do think what it is doing, Seamus, I do think, just for someone that's worked in the media for a while, I do think what Facebook, Twitter, all of these things are doing is that they are very much, very quickly changing the landscape as to how
100%
information is conveyed.
And
I do think that it is happening at such a fast pace that 5 years from now, it's going to be unrecognisable.
I don't disagree with that.
And I can see situations like, what can I say? I can see situations where there, you know, I'm quite a prominent broadcaster in Northern Ireland, okay? I can see a situation within the next 5 years that there may be someone as prominent, if not more prominent than me, sitting in their bedroom. And the platform that they have is not a radio show on the BBC. The platform that they have is a platform in their bedroom that they've created themselves. I can actually see things like that happening in Northern Ireland very, very quickly indeed. That you could have.
It's not even now. Let me come in on that. It's not even 5 years. It's now. Last night from my bedroom in Glasgow, I presented with...
I don't want to know what happened last night in your bedroom in Glasgow.
Yeah, I know you don't know, but actually it was all off of you. But I can tell you, we were broadcasting to the world. We had all of the cutaway, the cameras. We were able to bring in different people around. We had subtitles. We had text.
And did those 15 viewers like it?
You've got to do something that lots of people want to see.
150,000.
Nonsense. There's a difference between reach and actual viewers. What was the figure then, Basil?
Well, okay, the viewers is probably considerably lower. Probably about 500 or 600 people watched it. But it's still 500 or 600
more than people listen to Vinny's show.
Oh, I was waiting for that. That's very good. Yeah, it's very funny, yes. Hilarious.
He's not denying
it. But I can tell you, you of course can make a commentary on it. I can tell you, augmented reality, virtual reality, broadcasting live on Facebook Live and on Periscope will change the interaction between the people and politics, between the people and commentators. It will have a big effect and people will have to come to terms with it.